This is an uprising against smug elites. Smug elites. So they're the villains, and the opposite is America. Because America is now one big gay disco.
Yes, yes, I
am. That's not evil? Being hostile to all mankind and subversive is not evil?
Well, I have to say that because St. Paul said the Jews are enemies of the entire human race. They are.
What do you think of Jordan Peterson?
Did you see the video about where he said I can't do it?
Adam, I'm trying to do you a favor.
You're fighting for the gay disco.
Don't make your ignorance normative for the rest of us.
Don't use those kinds of slurs.
You're fighting for the gay disco.
What? There are no slurs here.
Die for the gay disco. This is an uprising against smug elites.
Definitely our most requested guest, Dr. E. Michael Jones, a man who needs no introduction.
I mean, it is. That's what they pay the Rockefeller Foundation to do. You're not supposed to know. Well, I just told you.
They didn't know what we know now.
Is there any argument you can use to wake them up?
Yeah, I think God had a plan for your life.
Well, you'd be jerking off every curvy piece of driftwood you saw at the beach.
I fight the people who don't like this song.
Maybe you would.
And you're consistently refusing to talk about pornography.
Pete Buttigieg seems to be the exhibit A of that process.
Yes, yes.
Because you think that the anus is a sex organ, don't you, Pete?
Richard Spencer hands out spears and he says, charge the machine gun nest.
Dr. Jones. Sorry.
Not all of the heads of the Federal Reserve were Jews, but after a certain period of time, that seemed to be the case.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of EMJ Live in beautiful springtime South Bend, Indiana. As the world is in a total uproar. And this is why. Bill passed Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, just passed the House of Representatives, 320 to 91. The bill has broad bipartisan support and will begin the process of cracking down on the anti-Semitism we've seen run rampant on college campuses across America. What he's calling anti-Semitism is, of course, the students protesting the genocide in Gaza. He forgot to mention that. So it sounds as if there's some type of causeless, irrational eruption of something or other here on college campuses, and that is not the case. It is the human reaction to massive injustice. I was on college campuses in 1970, I graduated in 1970. There was a huge uproar back then. We left. My wife and I walked through her campus trying to get people to join the protest. And what was that about? It was about Nixon sending the troops into Cambodia. Nothing in comparison to what the Israelis have done in Gaza over the past 6 months. Nothing. Nothing compared to that. That led to Kent State, where the National Guard was called in, armed with M1s, which are combat rifles. Okay, you fire a bullet from an M1, it goes a mile in the direction, and they killed four students. And that led to eventually the end of the draft and the end of the war in Vietnam. Let's hope that this will bring about some type of end without people having to die. But the way the troops have been trained here, it's obvious that the police, the authorities are looking for trouble. They are going to crush this protest with maximum brutality, because this is different. this has to do with the Jews. And once you start dealing with the Jews, then all bets are off. Everything is different. None of the normal rules apply, including the United States Constitution and the First Amendment thereto. So yesterday, I tweeted this statement. 320 congressmen betrayed the American people for Jew money, Jewish money. Judas got 30 pieces of silver from the Jews to just betray Jesus. Mike Johnson got $500,000 from IPAC to put Americans in legal jeopardy for quoting the Bible. By the way, is it now anti-Semitic to say that Judas got 30 pieces of silver from the Jews, or is it just illegal? And so a storm of tweets after that. As of now, which is about 24 hours later, we've had 1 million views, 5,300 retweets, 616 comments. This is not so much a comment on my eloquence, which I'm sure is part of it, but it shows you the rage that is just simmering beneath the surface here because of the entire world watching the Israelis get away with murder. That is not an exaggeration. They are getting away with murder. And there's a sense of insecurity that is creeping through the entire world, which is basically, if they can treat the Palestinians that way, what's to prevent them from treating us this way? Nothing. Nothing. And the magic formula is going to be anti-Semitism. If they say you are an anti-Semite, okay, you lose. Whatever protection you had as a citizen of the United States of America, the laws do not apply to you anymore. The Constitution will not defend you. You will be at the mercy of these bloodthirsty people. That's not an exaggeration. Gaza is proof of how bloodthirsty these people are, who hold the moral law in contempt. And if they, what's the intermediate stage here? It's all of those cops being called into campus. Guess what? They're not students anymore. They're Palestinians. They're terrorists. All you have to do is read the talking heads. And so once you dehumanize those students like that, before they were students at Columbia University or whatever, now they're terrorists. And now these goons can come in and treat them like Palestinians. And we know what that means. And why did they do that? How did they learn that? Because they were sent to Israel. They were all trained in Israel. This is the Israelification of local police forces that has been taking place for years throughout this country. It's the story of Cop City in Atlanta, where they had all other brutal demonstrations at Emory University. This is the story of what is happening to our country. We are now Palestinians. We can be treated, the citizens of the United States are Palestinians in an occupied country. And as Pat Buchanan used to say, the United States Congress is Israeli occupied territory. That's what it is. If we needed any proof, this is it. This is the cunning of reason. They did exactly what they shouldn't have done. They gave us proof that the entire Congress is under the control of the Israel lobby, and the entire Congress, as long as you stuff their pockets with Jewish money, they will turn on the people that they were elected to represent, and they will expose them to legal jeopardy, to the point where if you quote the Bible, you can go to jail now. Specifically, if you have to check with a Jew now about how whether you're allowed to read the Bible or not. Because if you quote 1 Thessalonians 2, the Jews are the people who killed Christ and they are enemies of the entire human race, that counts as anti-Semitism. You're not allowed to say that. This is, I have said before, it was kind of lonely back in 2009. When the first edition of the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit came out, and I immediately got on the ADL shit list, okay? But it's not lonely anymore. Okay. There are just too many people out there who have been antagonized, who've been slandered by the ADL, and now the reaction is setting in. Okay. Now, this is a time, a crucial time for the Jews, especially. It's a crucial time for America, but it's also a crucial time for the Jews. And we talked about that last week. Jonathan Glazer, the director of a Holocaust movie called The Zone of Interest, it got an Academy Award, because you always get an Academy Award when you do a Holocaust movie. And he said, I refute my Jewishness. We refute our Jewishness. This is a crisis for the Jews right now. Okay. And it should be a crisis for the Jews, because it's now obvious what the Jews stand for. This is the Jewish people, the same people that crucified Jesus Christ. The Sanhedrin then, major Jewish organizations now, those same people are the people who are crucifying the Palestinians in Gaza as the world stands by and wrings its hand. And the more we stand by and wring our hands, the more you can feel the rage building. So I'm going to take my stands now, and I'm going to give some advice to my friends, the Jews. Okay. A lot of Jews have followed my advice. Okay. We talked about that before. They are now in an absolutely existential crisis, as Jonathan Glazer's Oscar speech said. This is a man who understands Jewishness. He understands that Jewishness means that his people are enemies of the entire human race. This isn't just St. Paul anymore. The United Nations knows this. When there's a vote, it comes up. There are four countries that basically stand, three countries that stand with Israel. One of them is the United States, and one of them is Nauru, and the other one, I don't even remember though. Nauru is a shithole country in the middle of the Pacific Ocean that eats fried chicken shipped in from Australia. The United States has totally isolated itself because of its association with Israel, with the criminal regime in Israel. And now, as I said, there's an existential crisis for the Jews. So I know that people find this hard to believe, but I love the Jews. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. I love the Jews. Now, I say that because the Jews are my enemy. The Jews are enemies of the entire human race. And Jesus Christ said that we should love our enemies. And I try to follow the teaching of Jesus Christ. And so hard as it is sometimes, I try to exhibit my love for the Jews. Now, how do I do that? Well, let me tell you a way that you can express hatred for the Jews. Okay? You're familiar with this. I've already talked about it. Bishop Barron has expressed hatred for the Jews. Now, I'm sure he's going to be shocked to hear that, but I'm going to back it up by saying that one of the guys who published my books early on was a Jew by the name of Bruce Fingerhut. Bruce Fingerhut eventually converted to Catholicism, accepted baptism. And then when we would eat Chinese food, Jews love Chinese food, by the way, we'd get together and he'd tell me the most, the people who really hate the Jews, the real deep anti-Semitism are the people who want to hold Jews back from baptism. That's what he said. Other Jews have said the same type of thing. Because why do you say that? Because if you don't want them to be baptized, you want them to go to hell. So Bishop Barron evidently wants Jews to go to hell. Because when Ben Shapiro asked him the question, you remember that? Ben Shapiro says, let me get to that question. Bishop, am I basically screwed? In other words, am I going to go to hell? So on and so forth. And then Bishop Barron gave an answer that was basically incomprehensible. He danced around the issue. He made a fool of himself by showing that he didn't understand what invincible ignorance is. how it does not apply to the Jews, and how the Nostra Aetate, he cited Nostra Aetate, it has nothing, invincible ignorance has nothing to do with Nostra Aetate. Okay? But Ben Shapiro, also, it cannot apply to Ben Shapiro because he knows who Jesus Christ is. He knows what the message is. He's in rebellion. So he should have said, Ben, are you baptized? No. Ben, if you refuse to be baptized, you cannot be saved. Okay, now that's the theoretical statement of the issue here, and that's true. I dare any theologian to contradict what I just said. I dare any theologian in the Catholic Church, any church. If you refuse to be baptized, you cannot be saved. That immediately eliminates invincible ignorance, got nothing to do with that. If you refuse to be baptized, you cannot be saved. What does that mean? What does that mean? Now, we've gotten to the point where it's so abstract. Okay, so you're not saved. So I guess I end up in hell. So what? So what? No, this is, we've lost a tradition here in America, first of all, and in the Catholic Church, of the meditation, the retreat, the Ignatian retreat. We're talking about the era right around the Council of Trent, when you had these, you wanted to convince the people, you wanted to create what they called devotion. Devotio Moderna, it goes back, Thomas a Kempis, it had old roots, but it came to the fore around the time of the Reformation, and this is the time of Ignatius, and you went on an Ignatian retreat so that that Jesuit could convince you. Not they talk about the head and the heart. This is to get to the heart and convince you of what the stakes are. Let's get real about this. Let's not just talk in abstractions like saved and salvation and damnation. Let's talk about the reality. And this is an American tradition as well. I'm going to read to you what is from this probably the most famous sermon in American history. It's called Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. It was given by Jonathan Edwards, Northampton, 1741. Connecticut River Valley, which was going through an emotional outburst that was known as the Great Awakening. The God that holds you over the pit of hell, much as one holds a spider or some loathsome insect over the fire, abhors you and is dreadfully provoked. His wrath towards you burns like fire. He looks upon you as worthy of nothing else but to be cast into the fire. He is a purer eyes than to bear to have you in his sight. You are 10,000 times more abominable in his eyes than the most hateful, venomous serpent is in ours. You have offended him infinitely more than ever a stubborn rebel did his prince, and yet it is nothing but his hand that holds you from falling into the fire every moment. It is to be ascribed to nothing else that you did not go to hell the last night, that you were suffered to wake again in this world after you closed your eyes to sleep. And there is no other reason to be given why you have dropped into hell since you rose in the morning, but that God's hand has held you up. There is no other reason to be given why you have not gone to hell since you have sat here in the house of God, provoking his pure eyes by your sinful, wicked manner of attending his solemn worship. Yea, there is nothing else that is to be given as a reason why you did not this very moment drop down into hell. Now, I'm not a Calvinist. Jonathan Edwards is a Calvinist. And the Calvinists had a problem, which I'm going to talk about in my book on American identity. And the problem was an exaggeration of original sin, an exaggeration, a distortion of the idea of predestination, which was basically the Islamic understanding of predestination, which is you have no free will and you're basically your life is determined. This is all wrong, okay? And I'm not a Calvinist, but there's part of this that is right. And the right part is that there is a hell. And the best characteristic that we can use to describe hell is fire. Fire. All the scriptures are unanimous about this. It's fire. It's eternal fire. Okay? Now, what does that mean? Now, this is personal as well. Okay? It's not abstract. There was a guy who lived around the corner by the name of Sam Shapiro. He was a professor of history at Notre Dame, and he walked into my life, literally, and he continued to walk into my life for the rest of his entire life, which was about 20 years. And we would have heated discussions. He wanted to convert me to his religion, which was basically Darwinism, and I wanted him to convert to my religion, which is Catholicism, okay? And it went back and forth and back and forth, and then he started to tell me about his wife. She was a professor at Indiana University at South Bend. Her name was Gloria Kaufman. She's gone on to her eternal reward or punishment since this time. And he told me in no uncertain terms about her wickedness. She used Indiana University and the gender study or women's studies program as a way to proselytize all these poor ladies who wanted to get a better job, proselytize for abortion. She bragged about the number of abortions she procured. And she also bragged about the families that she destroyed by persuading those gullible women into divorcing their husbands. Totally wicked person. Okay. A Jew as well, unbaptized. Okay. And then published it in an article, and Sam refused to talk to me. Sam, why are you not talking? You're the one who gave me the information about your wife. I would have never known this unless you told me. The wife was called down to IU because she brought a witch in here. It was also a witch's coven. She brought a witch in here, and public funds paid for this witch to do witchcraft. It was a religious service. Okay, that wasn't good. So Gloria got called down, but so the president brings her into the office, and he should have fired her on the spot, but she had Jewish privilege. And so she went back and continued her wickedness until the day she died. Okay. So sometime after this, I get a call, and it's Sam Shapiro. And Sam says to me, when I look in the mirror, I see a dying animal. And I said, well, we're all going to die. You're probably going to die sooner rather than later. So let's talk about the four last things. Well, death, judgment, heaven, hell. When you get to hell, you have to talk about fire. Everlasting fire. What does that mean? What does that mean? Oh, well, I don't believe in that, Sam said. And then he said to me something even stupider. I want to spend eternity with my wife. Sam, I said, be careful what you pray for. Okay? Your wife was one of the wickedest people in South Bend, Indiana. You do not want to spend eternity with her. You want to spend eternity with God in heaven. And in order to do that, you have to be baptized. Okay? And in order to get you baptized, I have to talk to you about the four last things. It's not to motivate you out of your intellectual torpor. And one of the things I have to talk about is fire. Fire. Now, this is not just fire. It's everlasting fire. And so, again, now we're going to go to a Catholic, okay, a Catholic take on this issue based on that whole history of Ignatian spirituality where you get together for 30 days and the priest convinces you of your wickedness so that you can reform and become a better person and get to heaven, which is the goal of this life, okay? And in order to do that, this priest decided to talk about fire, okay? Just an experiment. For my Jewish friends out there, for the Jews that I really, I'm the guy who has your best interest at mind. Take your finger and hold it in a candle flame for 10 seconds. And then you take it out and then think about the pain in your hand. And now you're going to go and put something on it, and eventually it's all going to go away, because that's not eternal fire. This is the sermon. This is the starting point for the sermon that I'm going to talk about here. Place your finger for a moment in the flame of a candle, and you will feel the pain of fire. But our earthly fire was created by God for the benefit of man, to maintain in him the spark of life and to help him in the useful arts, whereas the fire of hell is of another quality and was created by God to torture and punish the unrepentant sinner. Our earthly fire also consumes more or less rapidly, accordingly as the object which it attacks is more or less combustible, so that human ingenuity has even succeeded in inventing chemical preparations to check or frustrate its action. But the sulfurous brimstone which burns in hell is a substance which is specially designed to burn forever and forever and with unspeakable fury. Moreover, our earthly fire destroys at the same time as it burns, so that the more intense it is, the shorter is its duration. But the fire of hell has this property, that it preserves that which it burns, and though it rages with incredible intensity, it rages forever. What does that mean? Forever. That means eternity. And so the preacher goes on. Last and crowning torture of all the tortures of that awful place, namely hell, is the eternity of hell. Eternity. O dread and dire world, eternity. What mind of man can understand it? And remember, it is an eternity of pain. Even though the pains of hell were not so terrible as they are, yet they would become infinite, as they are destined to last forever. But while they are everlasting, they are at the same time, as you know, intolerably intense, unbearably extensive. To bear even the sting of an insect for all eternity would be a dreadful torment. What must it be then to bear the manifold tortures of hell forever, forever, for all eternity? Not for a year or for an age, but forever. Try to imagine the awful meaning of this. You have often seen the sand on the seashore. How fine are its tiny grains, and how many of those tiny little grains go to make up the small handful which a child grasps in its play. Now imagine a mountain of that sand, a million miles high, reaching from the earth to the farthest heaven, and a million miles broad, extending to the remotest space, and a million miles in thickness, and imagine such an enormous mass of countless particles of sand multiplied as often as there are leaves in the forest, drops of water in the mighty ocean, feathers on birds, scales on fish, hair on animals, atoms in the vast expanse of the air. And imagine that at the end of every million years, a little bird came to that mountain and carried away in its beak a tiny grain of sand. How many millions upon millions of centuries would pass before that bird had carried away even a square foot of that mountain? How many eons upon eons of ages before it had carried away all? Yet at the end of that immense stretch of time, not even one instant of eternity could be said to have ended. At the end of all of those billions and trillions of years, eternity would have scarcely begun. And if that mountain rose again, after it had been all carried away, and if the bird came again and carried it all away again, grain by grain, and if it so rose and sank as many times as there are stars in the sky, atoms in the air, drops of water in the sea, leaves on the tree, feathers upon the bird, scales upon fish, hairs upon animals, at the end of all of those innumerable risings and sinkings of that immeasurably vast mountain, not one single instant of eternity could be said to have ended. Even then, at the end of such a period, after that eon of time, the mere thought of which makes your very brain reel dizzily, eternity would scarcely have begun. Now, before I go on, I have to tell you, that's from a great work of fiction called Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. It was written by James Joyce, an Irishman, and he's recounting the type of retreats that he used to go to in Ireland as a young man at the beginning of the 20th century. It's a work of fiction, but there is a truth there that shines out throughout that book. And this was a type of devotion that people like Ignatius of Loyola created at the time of the Counter-Reformation, and it continued in Ireland up to this day. And when I read this as a young man, it resonated completely with me because I felt I'd been raised the same way that James Joyce had been raised. Actually, I was, because he was taught by the Christian Brothers and the Jesuits, and I was taught by the Christian Brothers and the Jesuits. And at that time, there wasn't a whole lot of difference between his era and mine. Okay. This is what Bishop Barron should have told Ben Shapiro. Bishop Barron, we have to draw some type of conclusion here. Either he hates Jews and wants them to burn in hell by depriving them of baptism, or he is ashamed of the gospel and willing to censor his message for worldly prestige and fame. Now, if he's listening, please tell me if there's another option, because these are the only two that I see. Okay? And they have the same option. They have the same results. Jews will burn in hell because a bishop refused to offer them salvation through baptism. It's that simple. There's no way to get around it. If you refuse to be baptized, you cannot be saved. If you refuse to be baptized, you will be damned. And that means you will spend eternity in fire of the kind that we have described here. There is nothing. There are no other options. I challenge any theologian to say where I'm wrong here. Okay. Now, it's such a similar situation here. There are two options for the Jews now. Okay. And both of them involve annihilation. First option is the one the Jews are pursuing right now. The name of that option is Masada. If you don't know what it is, at the time when the Romans legions destroyed the temple, the Jewish revolutionaries escaped from Jerusalem to a hill called Masada. And when they got to the top of that hill, they killed themselves. They committed suicide. Anthony Blinken climbed Masada on his own two feet, didn't take the elevator, because it had deep meaning to Anthony Blinken. This is what his father-in-law said. It's in his memoir. This has deep meaning for us now, because we are now involved in the Jewish suicide mission that began with Masada, because we're supporting the suicide mission that the Israelis are currently on right now in their war of extermination against the Palestinians. There's a second option, and this is the one I recommend, and it's called baptism. Now, both of these options involve self-annihilation. Okay? You only have two options now, my Jewish friends. Okay? You can follow Netanyahu to the crest of Masada, and you can all kill yourself by committing suicide, one way or the other. Or you can accept the annihilation of the Jew that is known as baptism. If you get baptized, you are no longer a Jew. Every Jew understands that. That means you are no longer responsible for the Jewishness that Jonathan Glazer feels that he needs to refute. You are no longer responsible for the crimes of the Jewish people, from the killing of Christ all the way up to the killing of Palestinians in Gaza. This is, you can feel the rage building. And if you can feel the rage among human beings, this gives you some indication. Is God angry? Can God be angry? Yeah, I think he is. Just give credit to Jonathan Edwards where credit is due, because no one is talking about the anger of God. And what if there's one thing that causes the anger of God, it is the slaughter of innocents. The Jews are notorious for this. Abortion is a fundamental Jewish value. Herod slaughtered the innocents because he tried to get to slaughter Christ, and he failed. The Israelis are slaughtering innocents, the innocents in Gaza as we speak. And they're threatening to do worse now. They're threatening to go into Rafah, which is a refugee camp, because they've been driven out of their homes. They're living in tents, and a tent is no protection against an F-16. I guarantee you that. If the apartment buildings are no defense, a tent is no defense. And they are threatening to go there and to use the words of Donald Trump to finish the job. That's a suicide mission. Whether they know it or not, that's a suicide mission. And I'm a friend of the Jews. I have your best interest in mind, because unlike Bishop Barron, I'm willing to tell you the truth. And the truth is what St. Peter said when he went to Jerusalem. You killed Christ. When he said that, the Jews were cut to the heart. And they said to him, what must we do to be saved? And he said, you must be baptized. That offer still stands. That is your last chance. That is your last chance before Masada. It's either baptism or Masada. And you've got to make the choice. And I pray that you make the right choice this time and not end up like Sam Shapiro. That's my rant. Let's hear what you have to say.
Okay. Hello again. This is Mike Bajakis, Dr. Jones' assistant. We are not going to be on Twitter. We're going to go to Telegram this week, because Twitter is just, it just acts a little bit too funny. It's not correct with my setup. It's not desktop friendly. Elon posted something earlier this week about Twitter TV, which sounds promising. We'll go to Twitter call-ins when that rolls out. But Telegram, for those who don't know, every single description, all platforms you're listening to, I got the link to the Telegram call-ins for the chat. In Telegram, I will call on those who raise their hands. And then later in the stream, we'll read off some text questions from the various chats on the various platforms. Try to keep on one subject, try to keep questions on subject, try to keep to one question at a time. Be respectful of everyone's time, and do not forget to unmute yourself. All right, to Telegram, once again, hello, our good friends at Telegram. Sorry, Twitter, those billions of dollars don't always buy functionality. Let's see, who's first? Adam Finnegan. Go ahead, Adam. Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, can.
Hello, Dr. Jones. I had a question that might come up as a bit odd, but when I was young, I didn't really have much of a religious upbringing. I had the barest bone understanding of spirituality and metaphysics. But I remember at one point you mentioned that one of the earliest forms of godliness in man is essentially cave paintings, where essentially man renders a form of logos through imagery on the walls of rock that existed in ancient times.
Right.
And one of the things I was interested in as a little boy was this period of prehistory, where people would essentially create early art and storytelling as a form of devotion to the divine. So I wonder, would you consider this a form of logos or a form of godliness manifesting in me, even if I didn't have a direct understanding of it through someone directly teaching me?
Yes, yes, of course it is. The beauty is a transcendental. What you described is the beginning of my book, The Dangers of Beauty. So buy a copy, because it begins with the Altamira cave paintings. These were discovered in 1879 in Spain. They walked in, suddenly there's all these paintings of, looks like bison on the ceiling. This was, so they excavate the paintings, they're trying to figure it out, and then they find flutes, bone flutes on the floor. Well, I think what this was the first church. I think that this is where these people, we're talking about 30,000 BC, okay? These people are creations of God. They are rational beings. They have logos, and they are trying, they have an innate desire to worship God, which they perceive as a father in the sky. All primitive people have the concept of God. He's always a father, and he always lived in the sky. And so this is the first attempt of fallen man after the fall, after Adam and Eve were banished from the Garden of Eden. You have that long, wearisome slog, like to get back to logos, to the logos that was originally your nature, the fulfillment of that logos throughout human history. And the culmination comes when Jesus Christ comes as the Savior. And at that point, there is a way out. Before that, nobody understood. The Jewish people had some understanding, but there was no clear way out for the entire human race. That is what Logos is right now. And the beginnings of it, this was sincere, a sincere attempt on these people's part to understand and worship the God that created them.
Thank you, Dr. Jones.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Adam. Let's go to Dairy King next. Go ahead, Dairy King.
Hi, Dr. Jones.
Hello.
Is there any chance we'll see you at AFPAC?
If inshallah, I could say, if Allah wills it, Allah and Ben, I'm sorry, and Nick Fuentes. Yes, I'd love to speak at Nick's conference. I'm going to give you the rationale here. Nick has invited Jared Taylor, the apologist for white boys out there. The world is heading in the opposite direction. That whole white boy thing is a tide that is going out. Okay, the tide that is coming in is religion. Okay, we have people like Candace Owen converting. I just got a call. I got a call from Jason Whitlock. He's amazed at how all the religious fervor. It's like the Great Awakening. All these people are converting to Catholicism. Religion is the time. And I think Nick would be doing his constituents a disfavor by simply reproposing this worn out white boy stuff when I think he himself is repudiated. So at least give the other side equal time. That's all I'm saying. I'd love to come to the conference.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Derek King. Let's go to Patrick C. A lot of callers today. Patrick C. Go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Jones.
Hello.
I'm in kind of a conundrum. My father runs a business that I work for where we make communications earplugs. And we recently had a big order from not only NATO, but also the IDF. What should someone in a situation like that do as a worker? I know they used to have strikes before World War II and in different times. What do we do?
Okay, there's nothing immoral about earplugs. Okay, you could say it's like a hammer. Okay. There's nothing immoral about a hammer. You can use a hammer to murder the old lady down the street, but that's not the fault of the hammer. That's the fault of the abuse there. Okay, so then you got, look, I'm not a moral theologian. Here I'm pretending I'm not a moral theologian, but it seems to me that this is, if you're talking about military use of this, it is remote participation in evil. Okay, that's the way I see earplugs. That's the way I see what you're doing. It's remote participation in evil if the IDF gets it. That's my understanding. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a moral theologian. Ask your confessor if he agrees with what I said.
All right. Thanks, Patrick C. Let's move on here. Let's go to Andrew Horval, a good friend of ours. Go ahead, Andrew. Oop, are you there? I can see your mic kind of moving a bit. Are you there, Andrew? I don't know. You're not coming through, Andrew. I'm not sure why. It should be working. We'll go to someone else, maybe pick you up later. Let's try Rad Trad. Go ahead, Rad Trad. Are you there? Don't forget to unmute yourself.
Hey, Dr. Jones, how are you?
Good.
What's the latest with Church Militant and Michael Voris?
Well, apparently he's trying to make a comeback. I just saw the website. He's relocated to Houston. He's not taking top billing. He's got four guys at the top of the web page, but he's down there at the bottom. So it looks as if he's trying to launch a new operation for sinners and other people, or something. I think that was the phrase at the top of it. Look, we're all sinners. Michael, but we're not all homosexuals. And so this is so deranging. I said this before. I tried to help you out when I was associated with you. This is so deranging that you should look for another line of work. Do not in any way present yourself as some type of representative of the Catholic Church, because all you're going to do is give more scandal. You've already given enormous scandal already. God knows how many people come away who put their faith in you are now disillusioned and maybe are thinking of the losing the faith because of that. Don't do it. Get a job at McDonald's or something like that, but don't do this.
Thank you, Doug.
All right, cool. Thank you so much there, Rad Trad. Let's try Andrew Hoball again. He says his mic is good. Go ahead, Andrew. Are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can.
Awesome. Praise the Lord. Well, Dr. Jones, I do hope that you get to go to APAC, because the greatest threat to carnal man is not carnal flesh, which includes white supremacy. The greatest threat to carnal flesh is Christ supremacy. And I believe the carnal antichrists know this. You know this. I know this. And I hope that Nick, this young man, understands this too. And I want to commend the choice that you have set before men today, which is heaven through Christ or hell without him. I think what people do not understand is that God is a God of love, yet at the same time, he is a God of wrath. One God whose energy and glory manifest polarized extremes. Should not heaven and hell bear the same polarization, the bliss of heaven or the torture of hell? Now, God knows whether each of us will choose heaven or hell, for he knows all things. And this is where I believe we come to that word predestination that you have mentioned. I think it was Spurgeon. He said something like, if there was a door that men had to pass through to enter heaven, the entrance sign would read, if any man enter in, he shall be saved. And then on the other side of the door, if you look above the door, there's another sign that reads, according as he has been chosen, according as he has chosen us in him before the foundation of the world. And this door is Christ. And the only alternative to and refusing this door of Christ is to choose a door to hell. So I just wanted to thank you for pointing that out today, referencing that old Jonathan Edwards sermon. I just wanted to say thank you.
You're welcome, and amen to what you said. I agree with you. The hour is late, and the choices are limited. And for the Jews, it's Masada or baptism. In a sense, it's we all have to face this decision. It's an especially existential question for the Jews right now. And I'm their friend because I'm proposing the truth to them in a way that other people are not. But anyway, thanks for amplifying what I said.
Yes, sir. And that's one thing that people need to understand is that you're doing this in love. And sometimes the truth just simply hurts. When you love someone, sometimes this truth hurts. So keep up the good fight, my brother in Christ.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Andrew, so much. We're going to do questions here real shortly. So everyone in the various chats, Cozy, Rumble, what have you, Telegram, just start writing in your questions and we'll get to those after. Let's do one more caller, one good caller here. Libido. Go ahead. Don't forget to unmute yourself. Libido, are you there?
Hello, doctor.
Yes, hello.
Can you hear me? Yes, I have a question about Iran. That now there are a lot of protesters here, and they want to know that democracy is an option. We should back to monarchy. What's the solution? What's the alternative for nowadays Iran regime?
Well, I, as I said, I've been fortunate enough to go to Iran a number of times. I've been fortunate enough to meet a number of Iranians, sensitive, intelligent people, philosophers, when my parents, my ancestors were chasing pigs through the forest of Germany. And I think that I'm hoping that we can have a discussion here about the course of history and the real nature of Iran, which is a dual nature. It is not just Islamic, it's Persian and Islamic. And these two things coming together created a form of Islam known as Shia Islam. The Iranians are one of the few people conquered by the Arabs who retained their own language. And this has allowed them to retain an identity which is different than other Islamic countries. And that's the dialogue that I was hoping to have, especially in regard to demographic issues, things like sex and birth control. I've had some of these discussions already. I think we need to have them further. I'm looking forward to going back to Iran. The problem is the world in the Middle East is on war footing. We've already seen the attack, Israel attacking Iran, Iran attacking Israel. This is not an atmosphere conducive to discussing things. But, you know, I hope that this will pass, and I hope that we do have these discussions. I think that we need to, anyway, that's my hope. Let's just pray that peace will prevail and that we will have these discussions.
All right, time to read off some questions here. We'll try to do this nice and quick because you don't have too much time. Dr. Jones from St. Stephen 1 on Cozy. Do you think the Senate will pass the bill on anti-Semitism?
Yes. And I think they're already backing down. I've just got word now that they're going to reinsert that whole thing in the bill, saying that this has no force of law. It'll be the same thing as the program for anti-Semitism that got passed in May. That the top of it said no force of law. This does not supersede the Constitution. I think that they know now that they bit off way more than they can chew. This was a classic Jewish overreaction. Classic Jewish hysteria, like the sky is falling, make it illegal to criticize Jews. So the lackeys in Congress, this is not an exaggeration. This stupid move on their part proved that the overwhelming majority, 320 to 90 in the United States Congress, is willing to put the American people in legal jeopardy in exchange for Jew money from IPAC. This Congress has been exposed, okay? This is damage. This is a damaging thing to their reputation. Mike Johnson has exposed himself as a total lackey of IPAC, stands up at Columbia and says Hamas is roasting Jewish babies in ovens. And then now when you can see him on Twitter, IPAC tracker, he's gotten $500,000 from IPAC. This is a total train wreck for the government of the United States of America. They are losing all credibility. And so what I'm predicting is, yes, it will pass, but with the caveat that it is not going to be enforced, that it totally violates the Constitution. It'll just be a theoretical issue which will allow the lackeys in Congress to continue to have their front hooves in the IPAC trough, but it will also eliminate this catastrophe of dragging people into putting people in prison because they're quoting the Bible. So I think that's what's going to happen.
A question from Jonathan on Telegram. Dr. Jones, is the interest earned from a Roth IRA or a certificate of deposit a form of usury?
It depends on how the interest, I mean, how is the money that you put in being invested? Is there shared risk? If it's invested with shared risk in mind, then it's not usury. You're entitled to a return on your money if you share the risk. So that means buying stock, but not loading down a country with debt, which is what the corporate raiders like Mitt Romney did. And that's what the I forget the group that he was associated with. That's what they did. This is immoral. So it depends on how they're spending their money. There are Catholic organizations that try to invest money in a moral fashion. That, you know, usually they talk about abortion. That's not the main issue, heinous as abortion is. The main issue is whether your money is being, whether you're sharing risk, in which case you deserve a return. If you're not sharing risk, you do not deserve a return.
from Hans Hopper Groiper on Cozy. Hey, Dr. Jones, how do you view the future of the Democratic Party post protests?
The Democratic Party is being propped up by the Republican Party. This is, they've always done this. I have no idea. The lady who understood this was Phyllis Schlafly. So there's a Babylon Bee article just today. So once again, the Republicans snatch defeat from the jaws of victory by engaging, having Mike Johnson promote this censorship bill. And that was the most colossally stupid thing the Republican Party could do. But the Republican Party, when it comes to Israel, is worse than the Democratic Party. It's worse, and that's saying a lot.
Let's see, where was it? There was a good, from a user on Cozy. Dr. Jones, could you explain why during Mass at Easter, the lay people in the church are told to say, crucify him?
It's a dramatization of the events of the Holy Week. And so we represent the people, the Jewish people. There's a theology expressed in the Council of Trent. Is that it was sinners who crucified Christ. Now, this, a lot of people, the sophists out there, will use this as a way of exonerating the Jews. So it wasn't Jews who killed Christ. It was sinners who killed Christ. Well, wait a minute. Are you saying no Jew is a sinner? Let's get that Venn diagram up on the blackboard here, and you'll see how stupid that is. So there's precedent for this because our sins are the reason Christ was crucified, but you can't exclude the Jews as the main agents of the people who crucified them at the same time. So that's why the congregation yells crucify him.
From Richard on Telegram, I'm personally friends with Mike Lewis, the editor of Where Peter Is. His most recent article is against anti-Semitism. He continues to buy the ADL line that you are an extremist anti-Semite. I have repeatedly told him you're the trad villain he makes. You aren't the trad villain he makes you out to be. Do you think you could reach out to him for a one-on-one interview?
I tell you what.
Facilitate that.
Tell him to watch this podcast. Okay, and tell him then I'm waiting to hear where I went wrong. You tell me what I said that is false. I'll give you the formula. Okay, if what I said is false, point out the error. If what I said is true, why do you strike me? Or let me modify a little bit. If what I said is true, why are you calling me an anti-Semite? That's my challenge to this guy. If he wants to talk to me about it, that's fine.
Here you are. From Veritasity, will the anti-genocide protests expand beyond the colleges, and would you participate in one?
I would, yes. I participated in the protests against the bombing in Serbia. There is no extra campus protest movement at this point. So I'm glad that there is one on campus. I hope it does extend beyond the campus, and I'll be there. If there's one in South Bend, Indiana, I'll be there.
From Veritasity again, will you have Father James Maudsley as a guest on EMJ Live? Have you read his book? It's amazing.
Yeah, I've listened to his things. Yeah, I'd be happy to have him on.
There you are. From George Clapton, would you agree that the Freemasons are not a politically significant group in the 21st century, and to the extent they exist, are more just a chamber of commerce type thing?
Yes, I've said that. Now, to say the 21st century, no, that's saying a lot. That's saying a lot. And the in the United States, in America, in places like Indiana, the biggest building in Indianapolis, the biggest building in South Bend is the Masonic Lodge. So I'm saying yes, but if you're asking me, are they the cutting edge of the revolutionary movement at this point? No, the answer is no. They were the cutting edge of revolution in Europe in the 18th century. There's absolutely no question about it. Read my book, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, if you want the details. But now the Duc d'Orléans said before the revolution chopped off his head, he said, he was a Freemason, he said, Freemasonry is the candle and revolution is the sun. When the sun comes up, the candle is no longer necessary. And so the sun came up with the French Revolution. Okay, there's still a lot of Masonic activity after that. And then the sun came up again with the Russian Revolution. And by the time you get to the end of the 20th century, it's irrelevant. Okay, these are guys that wear fezes and drive around on go-karts. This is not the cutting edge of revolution anymore, any more than the Anabaptist in Napanee, whose ancestors came from Munster and the Anabaptist revolution there. They are an obsolete political movement, revolutionary movement. The Freemasons are an obsolete revolutionary movement. The sun has come up. So I stand by that statement, especially when you get, there's this conference by this group called Canceled Priests. Anyway, God bless them. Janice Smith's going to be there. God bless her. And the motto is, evidence has shown that Freemasons have a blah, blah effect on the Catholic Church. Well, if evidence has shown it, show it to me, okay? Because I don't see it. As I said before, name one Freemason who was involved in overturning the social order, and I will name 10 Jews.
It's 6:02, Doc. Want to do one more here?
Yeah.
All right. From Greg Hesse. What happened to Father Thomas Merton? What is the true cause of his death?
If you read Dave Martin and Hugh Turley's book, they make a convincing case that he was murdered by the CIA. The standard explanation is that the fan in his hotel room in Bangkok fell into the bathtub and electrocuted him. They make a convincing case that this was not so. And I think what we see here is this is the year of the assassinations, 1968. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Robert Kennedy was assassinated. And Thomas Merton was assassinated, too, in the same year because we have a crisis. Lyndon Johnson is a complete tyrant. He's worried. They're worried. The CIA is worried that the anti-war movement is hindering the advance of the war in Vietnam. Thomas Merton could have been the leader of the Catholic anti-war movement, and I think that's why he was assassinated.
Okay, there we are. This has been another episode of EMJ Live. It's every Friday at 5, for those who don't know. We got the Culture Wars magazine, culturewars.com. Subscribe to that. All of Dr. Jones' books, fidelitypress.org. Holocaust narrative's out. You guys got to buy it. Subscribe to the Telegram, the Cozy, the BitChute. Let's see. I don't have any announcements. Dr. Jones, what do you got?
It's Masada or baptism. God bless you.
Are we going to have EMJ Live coming up, or are you busy?
There'll be a hiatus for the next 2 weeks.
Hiatus for next 2 weeks. That's what I thought. All right, everybody. Thanks again. And we'll see you after these 2 weeks. God bless. Bye-bye.